Welcome to The Water Cooler, where our co-hosts Chris Smith and Jimmy Mackin interview experts on marketing, technology, business, and real estate. It's advice that works. For instant access to our best interviews, send an email right now to shownotes@aweber.com. That's shownotes@aweber.com. And now, here's the show.
All right, cheers, guys, and we're live. Welcome to The Water Cooler. It feels so strange without having Chris here, who's the co-host of the show, but I don't think if there's any week Chris could have missed that I think we would have been okay. It's this week because we got our man Scott Stratton coming back for a second time on the show. Before we talk about Scott and the book and what we're going to be covering tonight, if you guys haven't seen the first time we had Scott on at Rex Annual, the live interview we did, it's one of my favorite shows, one of our most popular shows. The first 5 minutes will sort of shock and awe you and pull you in. It's going to be just an hour and a half of just awesome content. So be sure to check that show out. It's one of my favorite shows again. If you guys are on Twitter right now, you can follow us with the hashtag #PoundWaterCooler. I'm not going to be monitoring the conversations about the show, but I will be checking them after the show. But you can connect with all of our super fans who will be online. Scott's Twitter handle is @unmarketing if you want to tweet him as well during the show. So, you know, if I were to, you know, our audience, Scott, as you know, is all realtors, and if I were to define kind of who you are and what you do, you know, I thought a lot about this actually. I watched an interview that you did with it was some like morning TV show, right? It was like this Canadian morning TV show, and the guy described your role as a guy who kind of creates social media campaigns, which is not what you do, right? Do you remember this interview? He's like, this is Scott Stratton. He creates social media campaigns. And you guys were talking about the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. And if I were to define kind of what you do, to me, you sort of shame people into thinking differently about their business through, you know, that, like, honestly, it's what you do. It's like you share these examples, and we look at those companies, and we kind of laugh, and we say, like, oh, they're idiots, they're morons. But we all kind of have that little voice in the back of our head that kind of has either thought of an idea like that or thought of a shortcut that we could potentially execute, and you're sort of that voice of reason in the industry. So, that's my explanation. For those of you who don't know who Scott Stratton is, unmarketing.com, great resource, great podcast, author of 4 awesome books that I want you guys to check out. And, let's kick it off, Scott. You just wrote this book, Unselling. And what I want to dive into is, you know, there's been a million books written about sales, right? Tactics and techniques and strategies. What did you think you can kind of add to the conversation? What was your angle in that sense?
First off, thank you for having me back. I didn't think we'd survive the first one, so that was that was nice. And by the way, being on national television, here's a tip for all the kids out there right now. Make sure you clearly state what your bio is before going on national TV so they don't say you create social media campaigns, which is the opposite of what I do and what I teach. And I have one of my lines is conversation isn't a campaign. So yeah, thanks for that. You should, my internal reaction to that, my brain was horrible, but I held it together on the show itself. So yeah, so that's a life lesson right there. For me, for Unselling and what Alice and I did, who's my co-author and co-host in life and on the Unpodcast and everything else, is we decided to stop for a second and say, realize, you know what, a lot of what's been talked about now with sales is solely transactional focused and attributing sometimes the wrong techniques to leading to those sales. Mm-hmm. And what we didn't realize was it's not a linear thing. It's not like in real estate, you send 6 postcards, make a phone call, then you get the sale. Human emotion isn't that predictable. Now, it's predictable on some levels, but really we don't give enough credit to it. Like, let's say somebody clicked on a Facebook ad for an open house and they eventually bought that house. Well, what you didn't see was the 6 different, we call it pivots, before that, which is they got to know you on Facebook, they're your Facebook friend in the first place, and why. They saw that you donated to a local charity 4 months before that, which made them want to follow your feed more. And so there's actually a long tail of interactions that happened before that sale. Instead of turning around and saying, see, look, Facebook ads work. No, Facebook ads can work in the proper context with the proper people and the proper history. But also, this, we didn't look at sales as an after the transaction. As an example, your industry, people look at it and say, you know, I got the sale, and that's what we count. We put it up on the pin board, and we give everybody an award. So everybody in the world is the top 1% of their frickin' industry, and we put it all up there. And we don't realize that after the sales, where the real sale, the unselling happens, that if they are a happy client, they refer people, not clients don't refer people, you know, static clients don't refer people, ecstatic clients do. And that's where there's a difference in a customer and a client. And I'm just in it for the lifelong sale, not the transactional sale. And I want to make money. I want to have a business. But I want to make sure that the people are so happy with both the interaction and the sale and the follow-up that they want to use me undoubtedly the next time.
Yeah. And in our industry, as you know, like, we are all looking for that recipe, right? The right amount of texts, the right amount of phone calls, the right amount of emails as soon as that lead comes in. What sort of skill set do you think a salesperson in 2014 has to have that maybe we didn't need to have 10 years ago or 20 years ago for some of the people who've been in the business that long?
Well, I can either repeat what everybody always says is about interpersonal skills and connection and all that. But, you know, I wrote that in the first couple books. Like, it's been said a lot over a lot of time, especially in the past few years. One of the things I want to throw in there on top of that is immediacy. You know, agents know about the fact that returning a phone call quickly makes sense. But actually, almost everything you do in a very kind of expeditious manner is very important, because it's how quickly, not only you react. I have a treasure chest of stories of poor reaction times by realtors. And actually, one of my stories about poor reaction time turned into a great reaction time. I spoke, we were talking right before we came on air, I've been speaking at all these real estate events, and I don't know why, by the way. I keep yelling at them and they keep bringing me back. So I told this story. I'm in Oakville, which is my hometown, west of Toronto, and I'm talking to the real estate board here, and I'm going off about, because we love Vegas. Allison and I love Vegas, and we were actually looking for a home in Summerlin. And we drove around, and we had the Trulia app because we're in proximity search. We're like, I want to see this one. So Allison calls up the reception, or the person answering the phone, and the person says, you know, are you ready to buy now? And Allison's like, what do you, like now? Like on the spot? Like, no, we're looking. Well, we just don't have time to go out there, you know, and see it. And so, like, we got brushed off, and then the other three or four houses we called and left messages for never returned our call. So we went home. Like, congratulations, you're complaining about how houses aren't selling in Vegas, and you turned around and we turned away and walked away. So let me fast forward to three, four, five days after that talk. I get a tweet from a guy, and it says on Twitter from a guy from Sotheby's. Okay, Sotheby's, you know, real estate. And it's Petrus Engelbrecht, who's an Oakville realtor, who was at my talk. I see a tweet, and it's just a picture of it's called Ronald's Donuts. Now, Ronald's Donuts is our favorite donut place in Vegas. You'd know this if you watched our Vegas 30 podcast. We recommended it. It's a hole-in-the-wall place in Chinatown, but they're brilliant. And we actually wrote about them in Unselling.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I see a box of it, and I'm thinking, Petrus here is in Vegas, and he's getting us some brownie points because he took our advice and went to Ronald's. No. The picture was taken of the donuts that he left on our front doorstep that was sent from the Sotheby's Vegas office, couriered overnight to our home, so because they want to reintroduce Vegas and real estate to us, to be kind. And he wrote and he said, I'm a sales rep with I gathered you've received less than satisfactory service from realtors in Vegas, leaving you homesick and longing for a place to call your own. Here's some Ronald's Donuts. We know you enjoy that place. And here's a letter from my colleague in that office. And hey, anytime you want to talk Vegas, let me know. And I'm speechless. I got a dozen freaking donuts from our favorite donuts place from another country.
Yeah.
But the guy did something. I always talk about people want word of mouth. We always want word of mouth. And the thing is, we have to do things worth talking about. Mm-hmm. And so what we did, coincidentally, was the day we were going into the studio to record the Unpodcast. I brought the donuts with me, and I ate them on the air and talked about how amazing these guys are. It cost them the cost of sending a box of donuts, but he did it quickly. He talked about it. He sent me a little Vegas card with a royal flush on it and some poker chips. Like, that That's all it took. And now, who do you think I'm going to go have coffee with?
Mm-hmm. And I think people's immediate reaction, if they're going to be slightly cynical to that, Scott, is because I think it's a great story, and I think it's, you know, and this is something you talk about in the book, this idea of, like, great customer service isn't great customer service if you only treat the VIPs with great service.
Right.
How do we take that moment that you talked about here, and how do we bake that into our routine, our businesses, where it doesn't become a special once-off type of event, but it becomes at the core of what we do as a company, as a culture, as a business?
Well, I think one of the things about at least Petros here at Sotheby's is that he didn't ask me to talk about it. He didn't tell me to go blog about it or put it on the podcast. He just said, you know what, I want to blow this guy's mind. He took my advice. I gave him the talk. Does it help that I have a show, that I'm an author, that I'm a huge deal on a pretend site on Twitter? Sure it does. But it was what, in your terms, I was a qualified lead. Mm-hmm. I'm in front of him, and I said we wanted to buy a property here. We self-identified. We told him where it was going to be, and he just did something that – but here's the thing. Here's what I really want to talk about. I understand your question, because people always say that to me. Sure, you get that treatment. I'm like, no. It has to be across the board, obviously. But here's the thing. I've told that story to thousands of real estate professionals over the past year about the poor treatment in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Thousands. He's the only one who has ever done anything. So even if it was only because I have a larger reach, it's, as we call that, low-hanging fruit. That's an easy grab, and we're not even doing that. Like, everybody would leave the talk and go, great, I'm going to throw my face on a couple more bus shelters, and that should work.
Well, talk to me. Let me just jump in there real quick, because this is actually something that I think is something our industry suffers from a lot, Scott, which is taking an idea and actually executing on it. Because you talk about – and I don't want to, you know, we got a ton of stuff to cover here, but you talk about businesses who are able to do this, right? You gave a couple of examples of the Ritz-Carlton example. And I think people look at Ritz-Carlton and they say, well, that's the Ritz-Carlton, right? They've got the manpower, they've got the staff, they've got the people to do it. What do we need to change in terms of our mindset to basically start to understand that we can do this? That it isn't just big corporations that can actually execute on some of these ideas that you're talking about.
Well, you have to realize that the Ritz-Carlton, that Sotheby's, that anybody, or in the book or not in the book, or what I talk about, has nothing to do with the size of the company. It has to do with the individuals in the company. Every single one of these events happened because some individual said, either, not on my watch, we're going to make this right, or this has happened, we can make this amazing. One person at Ritz-Carlton, in the laundry of the hotel, saw this giraffe and realized we have to fix this. If somebody working a hotel laundry can be awesome, are you saying you can't be awesome in real estate? Because why? Sotheby's, this one agent from Sotheby's did this. Not Sotheby's, not their whole budget. It wasn't because of this giant thing. Here's how Ritz-Carlton does it, and here's how you can do it. Ritz-Carlton hires based on personality and mindset, and how valuable those employees are. If you want to be awesome, you have to hire better. If your assistant isn't treating people well on Twitter or email, that's not a communications issue. That's a hiring issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have to bring in the right people. Awesome starts with one. It always starts with one, because it's your reaction. You either see something and say, this is an opportunity, or just push it aside. And that's the point. It's nothing to do with size of company revenue. I try to do things. I think every day when I see I'm trying to do something that I think is unexpected or awesome for somebody, not for exposure or press, just to make that person's day. That's why we do these things. We're a company of three of us.
Yeah.
Not 3,000. A brand is how we act. It doesn't matter if you're 1 or 1 million people.
Do you feel that? My mind's kind of spinning here, because you're in Vegas, and I'm thinking of Tony Hsieh, who runs Zappos out there, and what he's doing in the Vegas community, because everything you just talked about there, I think when you look at Zappos as a company, right? And people sort of associate Zappos with great service, and some of the things that Zappos, you know, did as a company to become so successful. One thing people don't understand, which is the reason Amazon bought Zappos, was because they figured out that people would pay more money for shoes on Zappos.com than they would on Amazon.com. And this kind of plays into this idea that, And this is where I want to kind of get into the fuzzy gray area with you, Scott. This idea that it isn't, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, it isn't this kind of linear connection that we all try to draw when it comes to what actually influences the purchase of a particular product or service. You gave this stat, I'm not sure if you have it, but I have it here with me, about what percentage of purchase decisions are made prior to actually having interaction with a salesperson. I just want you to talk about that kind of phenomenon, because that's really important for our audience to understand.
Yeah, 60% of decisions are already completed. They're already past the majority point that our customers are more educated now, not necessarily always smarter, but more educated, that they have more access to information. Just take real estate, for example. Mm-hmm. Before, back in the old days, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, yeah. Or you know, sometimes more than that, realtors had the key to everything, all the information, the MLS, all the data, everything you needed, so you had to go through a realtor, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Now that has opened, and now it's been, you know, kind of unlocked, and everything comes around, then you get the aggregate sites and everything that happens, we're sitting there going, oh, we've lost our strength, and your strength was never that, right? That was what you held back, but that was not your strength was not being a gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. And that was the biggest issue, where now they're educated, which should make your job easier, actually, because they're, you know, they can find out what's out there and what they want, what they need, and you know, a bunch of other things. So when you look at it and say, look, the people are coming at 60%, they're already decided. They're in this, because we call it the sales cloud now. You know, we always talk about the funnel, mm-hmm. and the sales funnel, and let's get them into our funnel, and then we can send them some fridge magnets and some calendars, and well, eventually they might buy, because we're front of mind, and we're in their kitchen, and we're fine. But there's a sales cloud out there, all with content and review sites and everything that's not reachable by you. Like, you don't have their email, or you don't have their mailing address. And that's one of the things we forget. The funnel has changed. That the funnel is now, we're getting at late entry into the funnel. That, to me, the sales funnel, to me, I'm a classical email marketing guy.
Yeah.
And for me, a sales funnel is reachable contact. So it's an email, it's a mailing address, it's an in-person coffee. That's a funnel where I can reach out and connect. What isn't a funnel to me is things like social media. Now, if I message you privately through it or something, that's fine. That's still connectable. But the issue with social media is, and on a side note, you'll never find a bigger social media fanboy than me. If it wasn't for Justin Bieber, I'd be the most popular on Twitter. But here, I social media has its place, and we have to remember its place. Because social media, to me, is a social sieve. It's not a funnel. Because if I send an email, you have to decide whether or not to open it, to delete it, to move it. But it's reactional. Mm-hmm. On social, if I send a tweet and you're not on Twitter in that 10-minute span, probably, you mm-hmm. won't see it. There's no decision made. On Facebook, if the edge rank gods deem my update worthy, that yep. maybe 3 or 5% of my likes or followers or fans can see it, they still might not see it. And so that, to me, is not a proper funnel. That is not a proper funnel. That's why I always said social is not a great sales tool. It's a great connection and community and customer service tool. But you have to remember what that funnel means.
Well, and this is actually, this is the soft stuff that people are afraid to really dive into. Because, you know, and we won't get into the conversation of is there an ROI of social media, because it's actually, frankly, just a stupid question. And right. we won't talk about it. But what our audience, I think, needs to understand, and the people who are watching tonight, is this idea that consumers are making the decision whether or not they're going to choose you before you ever make contact with them. So all the marketing that you're doing with your business, right, you may not see the immediate impact of that in terms of more leads, but you will see it in terms of the amount of qualified people who are reaching out to you. And we call it in real estate the come list me calls, where people say, right. Oh, I saw your reviews on Zillow. I'd like you to come to my house to list my home to sell it. And right. and the more energy you put into that stuff, obviously, it pays off in the long haul. But Scott, this kind of takes, and this is actually, I think, a challenge we have in real estate, which is how do we balance sort of that short term, we've got to make today's numbers and tomorrow's numbers, versus kind of this longer term stuff, which obviously isn't overnight. You didn't build the unmarketing brand overnight. You didn't build 170,000 followers overnight. You didn't purchase them, obviously. How do we balance those two things? Where, as a sales comp, as a really our audience tonight are entrepreneurs in their own right. They run their own little mini businesses to a certain degree. They've got to make a profit to move forward, right? To be able to be in business. How do you balance those two things? Because for me, it seems to be kind of a conflict. I think they all kind of face.
I think so, and the problem is, Nobody has a right to make money. Like, it's not your right. Like, it's like you didn't. Nobody has to give you money and give you. Well, I have to make it in the first month. Well, thank you for stating that. It doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't mean you will. And then you start forcing yourself down avenues and trying to do things that you know doesn't work, but it keeps you busy, makes you feel like you're going to create or generate some leads, which is why cold calling still exists. Yeah. You know, that we just think, well, if I'm just, you know, smile and dial, every no could lead to the next yes, and it's just a numbers game. Well, it's a stupid numbers game. And for me, you know, we look at it. Any business outside of real estate, by the way, when you're an entrepreneur, you create a business outside of that world, you understand that it could be 6 months to a year to 2 years until you actually turn a profit. Because even if you make money, you're reinvesting that back into the business. And what we don't understand is in that cloud where you said when people make these buying decisions before getting to you, part of that decision-making process and the most impactful, like you said, is when people see your reviews on something like Zillow, or they see somebody on Facebook mentioning it, or they ask, who knows a good realtor in this area, and people refer you, that is happening directly because of your efforts. I'm not saying the cloud is powerless for realtors. It's what people are putting into that cloud of information, including their reviews, which is, by the way, the cloud's not an even, it's not like all just neutral, meaning everything's valued the same. Mm-hmm. Reviews and peer recommendations are exponentially more powerful. But the thing is, your industry knows this. You know this. When I talk to realtors, when I used to do consulting, I'd sit down with somebody and say, okay, how much are you spending on this? Like, well, we're putting this much into to print, this much into the bus shelters, this much into this. And I'm like, where's your money? Where are you getting your money? And they're like, 94% is referrals and repeat business, 2%. And I'm just...
It's bus benches, yeah.
And I'm just sitting there and saying, so where is your revenue coming from? Well, yeah, it's this, but we got to keep the leads coming. You just told me. All your business, 5% of your business is taking away 100% of your marketing budget. Mm-hmm. When I would rather take that budget and hire somebody to help me out, to make it even easier so I can be accessible to my clients, to be better than my clients, to educate myself more in the industry, to visit people, the properties, to do things in the community, I'd rather you take $5,000 or $10,000 and sponsor, you know, every soccer team in town, and be at all of the games and just enjoy it and have your kids in it, then you are doing it the other way.
You're talking about a topic that I'm really passionate about, which is this idea that our marketing budgets are disproportionately applied to people who don't know us.
Yeah.
And they aren't applied to the people who know us, who have helped us grow our business, and the people who trust us. And I do want to talk about trust here for a minute, because you actually posted something Chris shared, this obituarylead.com, which is just... It's a sickening sight. But anyways, there was a guy in the thread who, and I'm going to read this, right? You're going to hold it up. Was it only $1 per lead? Yeah. We'll talk about that in a second. It's unbelievable. I'll have Scott sort of share his story about this and how we kind of stumbled upon this. But there was a guy in the thread who actually, and I got his name here, Blair H. Well, his initial, Blair H. He said, and I'm going to quote him here because this is a public post, "Realtors are the worst. The worst of the worst are those who refuse to acknowledge they no longer offer service and can't do anything themselves and refuse to negotiate the fees." In real estate, we have, I hate to say this, but we have two camps. We have the competent, caring camp who gives a shit about what they do and actually really commit themselves to their craft and take the responsibilities of actually, you know, how much it actually impacts a family's life to sell them a home or to help them purchase a home. And then you have everyone else. And unfortunately, what happens, Scott, is we, and I don't want to call us the good camp here, but the people who fall into that good camp, right, for lack of a better way of describing it, get bundled in the public's opinion with the rest. How do we rise above that, right? How is we, and people, because listen, there's nobody in that bad camp who's watching tonight's show, right? I can tell you that. So how do we rise above that, you know, knowing that the public does not trust our industry?
I think some of those watched the first episode.
Yeah, they didn't come back for episode two. No.
I'm not coming to see that jackass again. Forget it. But here's the thing: is your brand is obviously is the perception of what your marketplace thinks, and that's and Blair's comment. Who I know Blair. I'm in a football pool with him. He was just grumpy. He lost this weekend, so don't sweat him.
But this is a sentiment that a lot of people share, right?
It is. It totally is. And the thing is, it's they're right. And it's your job to prove them wrong. I think I said this on the first appearance, was you know, the lower the bar is set, the easier it is for you to shine in the industry. It's not a bad thing necessarily mm-hmm. that it's been. And what every reaction that people have like that, what they're saying is, I've had a bad experience with a real estate person. I've had a poor experience with them. And that, to me, is that opportunity, right? To realize, okay, I can either lash out and defend my industry and the honor and be braveheart and you know, attack them back, or I can be better. And I know good real estate people, and I know the ones that are, and like, as example, with years ago, the first social media business site ever was called Rise.com. And we had a Toronto chapter of that long, 10 years ago maybe. And we had a meeting, and we originally were, and here's the best, we were originally going to not allow two groups of people to come, multi-level marketers and realtors. That's how poorly we lumped these people in together, right? Amway salespeople and realtors, like that's what it was going to be because they were ruining so many events. And then we ended up not saying that, but it was kind of implied, like, just don't be that guy, that girl at the event. Yeah. And this realtor, Alan, came by, and he said, you know, he's a real estate agent. I'm like, ugh. But he's awesome, and he didn't chuck cards at everybody. He didn't bring brochures. He was wonderful. And he came for 6 months and helped and asked and got to know everybody. And then he said the 6 months, he's like, can I sponsor the next meeting? Mm-hmm. Maybe have 5 minutes to say hello. So he bought drinks, a round of drinks and appetizers. He stood up and said, I'm Alan. It's been wonderful getting to know you. My job is to get you the best price for your home if you're selling and the best price to buy a house. And I'm on your side, and I really love getting to know you guys. Mm-hmm. And walked away. And he was just inundated with people because he built the trust. But he took 6 months.
Yeah.
Do you think he needed to make rent to make a mortgage? Of course he did. But do you think he got more business that way in the long run? Yes. Now, if you have somebody, a broker, somebody, you know, breathing down your neck saying you've got to make these numbers, then maybe the problem is it's a bad fit. Mm-hmm. You're in a bad place. But if you have the ability to have the time to build those things, and your job is to kill try being a social media person. Like, you know how poorly we're thought of? Like, yeah. It's just like a keynote speaker. Oh Lord! Like it's just like it's like realtors, and then like we're down here. So right, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Metrics. This is something we talked about a little bit at the beginning of the show. This idea that, and this is true, I think probably for every industry, even beyond real estate, which is we're all looking for that blueprint. And I think one of the things that Unselling does. And we're going to be giving a giveaway here at the end of the show in terms of giving away 50 Unselling books, because this has just been an awesome time for Scott to come on the show and just share his insight. But we become obsessed with metrics, right?
Yes.
We look at how many clicks generate a lead, and we try to sort of repeat that model over and over again. And one of the things you talked about in the book, which is that it's not that metrics lie, but metrics don't tell the whole story. What metrics do you feel like as a real estate agency or as a team, what are the metrics we actually should be paying attention to? Because right now I can tell you, we're paying attention to page views. We're paying attention to how many followers we have on social media. We're paying attention to when we post something, how many comments and likes do we have. So talk to us about what you believe the metrics that we actually should care about are really for our business and that are actually measurable.
Yeah, and the problem is here's the kind of this life cycle of what I call vanity metrics, and it's we used to say going and I know all of you myself and Chris, and we've been doing the social thing for a while, and the initial problem was there was no metrics. It was kind of like, we'll just put it out there, and you got to be out there and hug each other, and we'll be happy. And now we're like, we got metrics. Now we got numbers and reach on Twitter, and you know, and all the great, wonderful, robust back end of Facebook's metrics are wonderful. I love them, but there's so many vanity metrics, which means look at this, but it doesn't mean anything. Followers don't mean, likes don't mean anything. I've seen realtors put a lot of money into making sure their Facebook page is mentioned and noticed. It's so, we call it fractional reaction. It's so small, the number of like 1,000 Facebook likes to how many people would actually click through finally to get to the final page within your site and look at a home. It's so fractional. It's barely even, you know, noticeable. And so for me, the valuable metrics are the actual real metrics that you're getting yourself, which takes a little digging in your business, which is, all right, I want to look at all the transactions I had in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Who gave them to me?
Yeah.
And how did they come into my world? And then you start building a trail. And I'm serious about this. And if you have you're in real estate, you don't have 20,000 clients.
Mm-hmm.
You have especially a handful of core ones.
What's going on, guys? It's Chris, co-host of The Water Cooler. And I wanted to just first of all say thank you for listening to the podcast. We really do appreciate it. And I wanted to cover five ways that you can help our business if you do feel like the podcast and the show helps your business. The first is that just subscribing to get our emails each week. You know, we do a show each week with a really smart guest, and you may not be on our email list. So to subscribe, it's very easy. You can send an email using your phone right now to shownotes@aweber.com. That's shownotes@aweber.com, AWEBER.com. And we'll send you a link to the show each week. We'd also love you to subscribe on YouTube and also in iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. So all the shows are free. We don't have ads or sponsors, but having a large subscriber base is part of the reason we get great guests. So we'd appreciate that. The second thing is if you're a top producing real estate agent or team, we'd love you to check out what we do. Our mantra at Curator is that we do marketing that works. We do website design, email marketing, CRM, landing pages, lead generation, seller leads, really a full service company that specializes in working with teams and agents that are top producers. And you can learn more about that at curatorsystems.com. Curator is CURAYTOR, curatorsystems.com. The third way you could help support us is I co-authored a book called People Work that's available on Amazon. Just search People Work, all one word. It's about running a people-first business in a digital-first world. We pre-sold more than 10,000 copies, and the feedback's been great. So if you haven't picked up the book, we'd love you to grab that. And lastly, Jimmy and I are both available as a keynote speaker. You know, we've been paid to speak at almost every conference in the industry, and we really bring a lot of practical takeaways and value, just like the show, when we speak. So if you have an event or conference coming up where you're looking for a paid keynote speaker, we'd love you to consider us for that. But thank you guys for listening. Back to the show.
You take them out for lunch. You take them out for coffee. You're not pitching them. What you want to do is find out, how did they get here?
You actually mentioned that, I think it was an unmarketing, geez, when I first read it.
Yeah.
The questions you ask your customers at the time. There's three. I can't recall them, but if you can recall them, like, this is actually brilliant. This is what, if you remember them, Scott, I want all of our audience to write this down, because I thought this was just an aha moment for me.
Three words. Stop, start, continue. You ask your clients, what should we stop doing, what should we start doing, and what should we continue doing to make sure that we are your real estate representation for life? And you can ask them that question. And you can ask them that in person. And it's actually good, because those three things give them kind of pinpoints to figure out, okay, well, if I can say this, and make them answer each one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them cop out. Don't let them say, I just continue being you, and you don't stop anything, and then start, you know, doing this. And then you can get some real answers. And sometimes one of the reasons we don't get these answers is because we don't want to hear the answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not sure we actually do. People always talk about feedback and customer. I don't think you want it all the time. And I think you need to hear it. So if you want to know that, well, you know what, it took you a lot longer than I thought. Or once I signed the contract with you for you to represent me, you started returning my emails a little later than it was before. Mm-hmm. You need to know these things. Nobody walks around all day saying, I'm screwing up. You know, we just don't, think that. We have to know, okay, so maybe this person here I bought from, I also want to find out why. You can ask them, you can, hey, do you remember, it's got to be recent people, but how did you get to me? Well, I actually saw your post somewhere. Well, I asked, here's the thing, every person who signs up for the unmarketing newsletter, now mind you, they're not a client, right, but every person that signs up for an unmarketing newsletter, they automatically get a thing from me saying, thank you so much for giving us space in your inbox, I know how crowded it can get, can you let me know what industry you're in, I love tailoring my newsletter and looking for things, and it'll be really helpful. Every day, for 6 years now, I get an email, at least from one person, if not more, saying, hey, I'm in this business. I'm just flattered you asked. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I connect with people more with that than anything I do. It's the conversation I get is awesome. I talk to the head of digital for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I talk to somebody who owns a restaurant in Kentucky. It's so cool that we have that ability to start contacting people, either pre or post purchase.
Yeah, and one of the things that, and it's, to me, I think you touched on it, Scott, which is it's not necessarily fun to ask these questions. If you're slightly embarrassed or resistant to it, then that's all the more reason to do it, because there's something there you're going to discover when you actually ask these questions. You just kind of were getting into this, and I think people, this is a hot topic in real estate right now, which is this idea of marketing automation. Now, I'm not talking specifically about like automating your tweets or automating your Facebook posts and things of that nature. I'm talking about what you just described, which is at a certain level, if we've got 1,000 people in our database, right, we've got to be able to sort of scale that service. Sending, you know, donuts to every single person we know is not, it won't scale. But there are ways that you just described which you can scale in a human way. So just talk to me about sort of, I think one of the, I guess the pitfalls, but also what you recommend doing in that space. Because it's tempting to basically just put people on a campaign, just forget about them and just cash in the checks when they come back around.
Set it and forget it, right? By the way, I think it would be impressive if you sent 1,000 people donuts. That would make them lose. You'd get some good press for that. Come on. Who would not get good press for that? But I think, I don't have a, and people mistake that with me, I don't have a problem with automation or marketing automation. I'm an old school email marketing guy, and I don't have a problem with that in the right circumstances. You know, newsletters is fine. And sending calendars out to me is fine. But, you know, it's I have the issue in social media doing it. But one of the things about scaling to me is, you know, just sending out that email. You can get these things out there. You can send out that video to, you know, with your family at the holidays to say, hey, everybody. But also then you make that pull back saying, if you want to contact me individually. So even though I don't email all my new subscribers, it's an automated welcome message. Mm-hmm. I get them all. Okay, I get them all. I have a five-figure size newsletter, right? So people are like, whoa, I can't keep up. I'm like, I get a couple a day. Most people don't answer them, and it comes right to my phone. And wherever I am, I'd write back and say, hey, you know what? And half the time they say, I know you don't read these. And I write back, I'm like, oh, I do.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, welcome aboard. Thanks for signing up. And that really leaves an impression with people. And I actually genuinely want to know. So when you get to something like scalability, relationships aren't scalable. That's one of the biggest problems, right? That's a problem with you when we're doing the great social media land grab. We're trying to grab our account on every site, and we're trying to friend everybody because we're supposed to be more friends, the better. It actually works opposite. The more you're connected with, the less you can connect individually with people. That's why you do those local events where you rent out a movie theater and have everybody's family there. Then you can semi-scale it. But still, it's not good when you shake a hand every 3 seconds and run through a line. I just don't know if the right thing is to try to have a prospect list so big that you can never talk to them.
Yeah. Well, the quality of the interaction. People actually ask this question to us a lot, which is, you know, should I blog or should I create content or should I market myself online through social media channels or whatever it is? Because I'm already 10 years behind the industry or whatever. And the reality is, what you're touching on there is like there's a void. The void is quality, right? There's always going to be a space for that if you have quality content. I want to get into rapid fire here because we're that sort of 10-minute mark here. One last question I wanted to ask you before we get into rapid fire, because we had a ton of audience questions and sort of the whole full spectrum, so we'll dive into it. But we talked about this before the show, companies that inspire you. Me personally, I'm a huge fan of companies like Southwest, of companies like Zappos, of even small companies here in Boston that I follow. And you mentioned a company that actually, as soon as I heard it, I want you to talk about Big Ass Fan here, I actually immediately recognized that they actually they supply all the fans for Planet Fitness in the New England area. Because I saw, like, I remember seeing that fan and seeing it at a Planet Fitness recently. The CEO of the company, I don't remember his name, but he, to me, had some really poignant advice on what it means to actually build a business. Because this is a company that is doing, I think, $100+ million in revenue at this point. So they're not just a small mom-and-pop fan company.
Kerry Smith is the founder of Big Ass Fans, and we decided to interview him for the book, and Allison called him up, and we talked about him. Because we read an article on him online, and we're like, we got to know this guy. He's in Kentucky. We're in a different country. Yeah. I don't have a need for a big-ass fan at the moment. We really wanted to connect with this guy, though. So we made the mistake on the show of saying, you know, they make regular fans, but they're an awesome company. And he got on the phone with Alice, and the first thing he said is, like, I watched the show. We do not make regular fans. We make big-ass fans, and they're awesome. And I'm like, all right, well done, sir. But he's like, so we put the thing in the book is we had, like, all you need to know about business you can learn from big-ass fans. And what his first thing he says is the customer cannot be dissatisfied. Like this is, and this is his sentence. That's how we get paid. It's this very simple equation for him. And he says relationships are first as well, but he also says, but here's the best part about him. He says relationships are first for the customer, the employee, and the suppliers. He says it's equally important to treat all of them well. Because it's a relationship business. And even going all the way down the list, it's like, I love it. Don't be a commodity. If the only way you can think of to make more money is by cutting corners, then you're selling out over money. Commodities compete based on cost, and you'll end up losing. And isn't that a huge motto for your business?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Cutting corners, cutting this, cutting that, that people notice these things. And I love him. He's the fact that one of the greatest things I love about the company is they do an employee education plan. So they'll pay for school for their employees, for university and for college and for this, I guess, state university there. And then my background's HR. So I understand benefits and programs. And we used to always do these type of things. And if you got a higher mark, you got a certain reimbursement, you had to stay at the company for 5 years. If it was a degree program or an MBA, they have none of that. That he says, if you stay with us for the 3 or 4 years of your degree, and then you leave immediately after getting it, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we want somebody to stay with us when they find an opportunity better somewhere else? And now we just have a good friend, an educated friend, somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. That's just a brilliant concept, and that's why I love these guys so much.
It's almost this trend I'm seeing with businesses that of owners who care. I think of RDT. I'm not sure if you follow the Market Basket scandal. Market Basket, I think, is a pretty big company in terms of, like, they do like $2 or $3 billion. They're part of a conglomerate. A gentleman by the name of RDT, right, who was a CEO of Market Basket here in New England, he got ousted from the job, right? And the people who took over basically just belittled the employees, cut corners like you just described, right? Cut pay, cut overtime, cut benefits. RDT, during the time in which the employees lost their shirts when their pensions basically dissipated, he put $40 million roughly of his own money back into the company fund because he felt a certain obligation to it. So why this is fascinating to me, and why this is kind of part of this whole idea of the sales cloud that you described to me, Scott, is when RDT got ousted from Market Basket, it wasn't just the employees who started a protest. It was the customers. Like my aunt, who's a very normal, because protesters are pretty crazy people normally. My aunt's a very normal, level-headed person, was protesting. She wouldn't shop at Market Basket. She wouldn't buy a thing from Market Basket because their leader, their CEO, the guy who actually ran the company, who gave a shit about their employees, who had that kind of top-down leadership, was that
the one with the empty shelves and everything too?
Everything was empty. Exactly.
I saw that. That was phenomenal.
We talk about Carrie from Big Ass Fans, and we talk about Herb Kelleher from Southwest, and we talk about RDT from Market Basket. To me, there's an immediate takeaway for our industry, which is this idea that if we slow down, we start to sort of really dig in a little bit and start to think a little bit longer term and treat people like people, and like don't let like the policies and don't let our industry, the way things used to be, the way things have been doing for a long time, direct us in the wrong direction of how we should treat people, because that's what it is in our industry. It's a people business. So it's a fascinating book, guys. I'm gonna get into rapid fire because I don't want to keep you too much longer here, Scott. Unselling. We're gonna give away 50 free copies at the end of tonight's show. I'll tell you guys how to do it. Chris usually does a promo, so this might be a little rough. So we'll let it ride from there. But let's get into rapid fire here. We asked our audience on a tech support group, you know, what questions they have for you and what they wanted to ask you tonight. So the first one is from Valerie Garcia up there in Canada. I think Valerie's in Toronto. She says, what's the future of paid online ads? Do you find that they're going to become more creative, meaning businesses are forced, if they're going to reach consumers, to become more creative, or do you think that we're going to continue to sort of fall into the trap of just being, you know, interruption first?
Well, I think about paid online ads, depending on which way you do it, contextual advertising, you know, Google ads, you know, at the top of my search where I put it in there, that I think that's brilliant. I think it just keeps getting bigger. It's been around for a while. That changed the game. That changed the game of everything. That's Google's, what, 70% of the revenue now is brilliant. And I think that here's the thing: people don't mind advertising if the context is proper and the message is targeted. Mm-hmm. We don't mind it. We will sit. I will go to a movie. Half the reason I'll go to a movie theater still nowadays is to watch the trailers.
Yeah, the ads.
They're ads. Mm-hmm. And I get angry at the ads before the trailers, like for Coke and for a car company. Yeah. But I will cheer for the ads that are movie trailers. Contextually, advertising will always have a place to me. Now, whether or not the eyeballs will still be going to the movie theaters to see those ads, it's a whole other discussion. But mm-hmm. contextually, advertising will always be there to stay. Paid advertising would always be there to stay. And I just think that great advertising, targeted or, you know, evoke emotion, which makes something go viral, because mm-hmm. You know, paid advertising when it comes to Google is not viral at all. It's, you know, it's a click through type of thing. But yeah, advertising in general that gets paid for will always have a place. Always have a place, and it always pays to be creative.
Well, in our industry too, and we talked about this beginning of the show or before the show, which is that dairy company that I want you to reference, because in our industry we sort of like to kind of paint within the lines, right? We don't want to go too bold. Talk about this dairy company real briefly about what they did to actually get the word out there, because I thought this was brilliant.
Shadow Milk Company from Kansas City, Missouri, which is a fantabulous name for a milk company if you're lactose intolerant. So it's they have on their trucks, like their Twitter name and their website, but at the bottom it says, in case of accident, please have cookies ready, lots and lots and lots of cookies. And it's brilliant. People take pictures of it and they share it, and they have an ice cream campaign that right now it says, yep, ice cream, you scream, the police come, it's awkward. Like, it's just, and the thing is, we asked them. We actually we wrote to them, and we put them in on selling, and we're like, hey, you know, how'd you come up with this? And they turned back and said, we didn't come up with this. We hired an ad agency and let them do their job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's brilliant. You know? And every agency person in the world just stood up and applauded. Yeah. Like, that was
exactly
their job is to make milk, and that's what they said. They won the award for greatest chocolate milk in the world. And you know why? Because that's all they do. Right? Well, that's the point.
Well, that's actually something I think we it doesn't make a difference if you have the greatest campaign with the greatest reach with the greatest amount of people. If your product or service is still shit at the end of it, it doesn't make a difference, right? Which is, and this is, you didn't bring up in the book, but like, it was kind of assumed, right? At that point.
Always a point. You don't have a Twitter problem if everybody says your product sucks. You got a product problem.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Donna Mock Robber, she wants to know, is direct mail marketing sexy again?
What are you, depending on what you're sending in the mail? Like, it's,
use your imagination.
I love direct mail. Address direct mail, like targeted direct mail, to me is just like anything else. Targeted, contextual, it works. I still look at my mail. Mm-hmm. I actually look at my mail more now than I did before because I don't want to look at my email. You know, it's just like it's
they flip.
Yeah, and because I don't get a lot of it now. Yeah. It's totally, but I'm also one of the guys that has on his mailbox no junk mail. So I'll get addressed mail and I won't get the flyers necessarily. And it's just, you know, I was like a middleman for the recycle bin. Like, I just wouldn't, I wouldn't care about it. But man, I want my casino postcards from Vegas. I'll certainly read those. So
contextual, relevant, right?
Take that phrase and put it, answer anything you are about to say. Is this dead? Is this alive? Is this dead? Is this email, direct mail, mm-hmm. paid advertising? Same answer for all of them. Context, content.
Well, that simplifies my questions here as we go forward here. No, we got a few more. But we actually have a great question from my man Jack Attridge, who's here in Massachusetts, and who's got a page. If you guys haven't followed Jack on Facebook, it's got, this is a great resource if you're looking for some people doing good in real estate. It's the All Marblehead page in real estate. He's built over the last 5 years a community of, it's probably upwards of 8,000 or 9,000 local people who follow his page just for updates on, it's, he almost treats it like a newswire. And what Jack asks is he wants some tips on how to engage his community. He probably, in this case, I'm going to make some assumptions, has the difficulty of, like you, where he has a large reach. He has an engaged audience. How does he sort of scale that in a smart way where he doesn't get too big to basically start ignoring people?
And see, that's the issue where you have to let the community almost sometimes, you know, cohesiveness itself, where, you know, you're almost like the facilitator of it. Mm-hmm. That your job, when it gets to a certain level, it's just like speaking. You can sit down and have coffee with three people. You mm-hmm. can't sit down and have coffee with 300.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Especially at once. What you have to do in a group of 300 is facilitate the community conversation, that you can't be the one talking, because I don't have a magic answer to how to do it, because you can't do it when you have 8,000 or 9,000 people. What you can do is create corridors. Mm-hmm. And people can come in and say, hey, we're going to hold this little get-together here and start making it more human and connectable. And then the people will actually, you know, qualify themselves to come and connect. But the community has a great way of actually, you know, creating those connections themselves. And so you set up ways to do that, whether that's going to be your forums, your message boards, mm-hmm. or your Twitter chats, or your comments on the blogs and articles, which, you know, lately have been very trendy to turn those off in a lot of blogs.
Yeah, I've seen Kobe Bloggers done it. A popular publication here, Real Estate 1001, has done that. It actually reminds me of the chapter when you do talk about Big S Fans, where Carrie describes himself as a steward.
Right.
Which is exactly what you're describing, which is this idea. And Jack, Chris and I started the tech support group and the What Should I Spend Money group that has 25,000 members across. And the best way that you can scale service is to empower your community and have those sort of people who are there to sort of help answer questions, and where they get that sort of recognition. It's not about you, it's about them. And the sooner you understand that, I think the better. All right, cool. So I love this question. This is from David, and I can't pronounce David's last name. Philippe, I think. I'm sorry, David, if I'm butchering that. So he prefaced this question, Scott, by saying, although you poke fun at realtors for the way that we market, what are the top three things that you think we can do to improve our image and the delivery of our service?
Take your face off everything. I'm serious. That's one. It's about you, meaning the connection, not you, the realtor, you, the client. But if you really tell me it's about the customer and the community, then why is there all the marketing about yourself? You know, mm-hmm. that to me is not the angle. You're so concerned about your face being on everything because you think that you read somewhere sometime in your life that familiarity with your face builds trust. And I'm not sure that's true. And I'm not sure who wrote that. But so take that away. Two, realize that homes are your business, not everybody else's. Mm-hmm. That because you think and live and you rightfully so live and eat and breathe real estate, your clients don't. So think about that next time you're sending out the next monthly or biweekly newsletter with only updates about the market of homes, and realizing 95% of my readers don't care about that right now. And maybe I should be creating content that applies to most my readers, not a few percentage that are in that buying. I know you want to talk to people who are in that mindset, okay, I'm going to buy or sell, but you want to stay in front of them for the long term of things. And and number three, stop saying you're about community if you're not acting about community. I'm fine. You want to do Smile and Dial? You want to sell as many houses as you can and work it? You want to do a reincarnation of Glengarry Glen Ross? Be my guest. Mm-hmm. But you're saying you're about community, then your actions have to be about community. Then you have to be in the community and be out there. And don't lead with your business card at events. That actually, you know what? I need to give you a fourth. It's if I give you my business card at an event, mm-hmm. it is not permission for you to add me to your mailing list. Mm-hmm. If you stop that, we would end a lot of struggle in the world. A lot of anger in the world would cease to exist if realtors stopped adding people to their mailing lists because they met them at a networking event and you handed me your card. It's about connection, not about numbers and mailouts and everything else. It's just be about the community. I get angry at your industry, not because I come to praise realtors, not to kill them and spite them. I actually like them, the good ones. Mm-hmm. And you have this great opportunity. I'm being honest with you right now. You have a great opportunity. You have the tools. It's like the $6 million man. Like we've given you the tools.
I've seen a lot of commercials with the $6 million man as of late, which is really random you brought that up. Like every time I'm watching TV at like midnight, I always see the $6 million man come on, which I had to actually research because I didn't know what it was about.
It's a good show. Good show.
that's what they keep telling me on those infomercials. So last question for you, Scott, and this has been an awesome interview. There's so many takeaways for me. And guys, again, we're going to give away 50 copies of Unselling. It's a fantastic book. You know, it's hard to write about a topic in a way that actually makes it interesting. And to be honest, like when you talk about selling, it's almost always about techniques. It's always about tactics and strategies. Very rarely do you come across a book which tells stories that really illustrate an idea, and that to me really resonates. So
it's also hard to make to write a book that has no cover, right?
Is there fake reviews in this one? Because that was my favorite.
Oh, there's no testimony. Fourth book now, still no real testimonials on them at all. And You try convincing your publisher to do a blank cover on a book. That took a lot of effort. But I get you, when you sell enough books, they'll let you do anything. So
exactly, that's it. Talent. Well, this we had Gary Vee on the show a while back, and he said talent matters, and that's it. Once you have some talent, you can actually do what you want. Last question for you here tonight, Scott. And again, we're going to give away 50 free copies of Unselling. Right now in our industry, and this is probably true for any small business, the need and desire to buy a bunch of stuff to get your business off the ground really exists, right? The shiny object syndrome. What advice do you have for someone who's watching tonight and for Catherine Kennedy Myers who's asking this question about when it comes to building a business and kind of keeping those fundamentals that you need to be focusing on, what are the things that, what are the questions I think you should be asking yourself? Like, before you buy this, you should ask yourself this question. Before you buy the next CRM, before you invest in the next lead generation service, what's the questions, what's the kind of gut check, if I'm totally butchering Catherine's question here, but what's that kind of gut check question you have to ask yourself as a business before you go out and look for that next shiny object?
It's a great question, regardless of how you worded it. And it's a question I just asked myself last week. And it was about, for me, it was about whether or not to join Elo, you know, the new social platform that everybody's rushing, the great land grab, and who's got an invite? It's like Breaking Bad for social media. It's like we're hooking people, like, who's got it? You got an invite? I had an invite. Ooh, it's that blue invite. It's really good.
Yeah. And Mailbox is not really good.
Oh, God. And it's I'm waiting for Heisenberg. And it's, to me, I looked at it and said, what I want to get from that I'm not already getting? And there was no answer. And so for me, it was looking at systems, looking, okay, so what your answer is what do I hope to gain? And what am I willing to sacrifice out of my current time to give the time I need to this new thing? Mm-hmm. If it's a CRM, you'll have a very high learning curve to get into it and to start it up. But then maybe we'll relieve your time constraints later. We forget about time. You know, the social media site's free, this one's free, this one's low cost. It's time is the highest cost we have, right? Everything we agree to, every system, even though the systems are created to relieve some time, every social site, every platform, every app takes away time from you dealing with current and prospective clients. And therefore, you have to justify it. And it's joining Elo and giving the time you'd need for any network online to make it effective for you worth not getting back to a client for a few hours? I don't know that the answer is yes. So, you know, if your answer is what do I want? Do I want to connect more with my audience? Do I want to be in front of my clients? Do I want to automatically email them crappy generic newsletters every month? Then okay, you've got to pick that spot, but you have to decide that here's the moral. There's never a problem asking what is going to be my ROI or my ROT, my return on my investment, or the return on my time. Mm-hmm. That's an important question to ask for many of you who are like me, who run your own business. You have to do almost everything, if not everything, and you have to say, what am I taking out of my current plate to put this into it? Because you cannot add it on top. Anything. You can't add it on top. Everything else will, it's a zero-sum game here. You can't just throw it on and say, we'll just keep doing it. You don't create another hour of the day. Mm-hmm. Your family suffers, or your business suffers, or you suffer.
If there's any advice that I get from that, is this idea of, like, if I'm going to sum that up, is like, do less, right? That's kind of like what you're getting at, which is if you're going to do something, you've got to be able to sort of really. I think this is actually, I'm going to try to sum this up in a better way. Anytime we look to add something, you should look to detract, right?
Remove. At the very least. And you can get into the whole discussion about removing tasks and delegation and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, at least you got to swap something. Mm-hmm. This goes out, this goes on. Look, if you're going to go on to an LO, and I don't say you should, please, like, don't. But if you did, then you got to lose LinkedIn. Like, I mean, you got to pick something. You can't just add to the plate because the plates, I'm sure, for most of you, are already full.
Absolutely. Amen. All right. Well, on that note, guys, I'm going to let Scott jump up the show. And this is how we're going to give away the books. Chris and I didn't really discuss this before the show, and I'm going to eject you, Scott. But you can jump on Twitter and follow the hashtag. And first off, guys, if you're not following Scott on Twitter, it's @unmarketing. The website, Scott, real quickly, is unsellingthebook.com.
You got it.
Unsellingthebook.com. So here's how we're going to give away the copies. And Scott, I'll go ahead and just eject you if I can figure out how to do this live as I'm talking. Thank you again. We're going to give away 50 free copies. I thought Scott was just, as always, you know, we had him on last time at the Rex annual event, a phenomenal guest. It's awkward. It's weird not having Chris here to have someone to sort of break the flow and to jump in every 10 seconds. But, you know, like I said, we've got an awesome guest. So I'm honestly thrilled. And I hope you guys got a tremendous amount of value from today's show. I know I did. So here's what I want you to do. I just want you to tweet. Just say thank you at Unmarketing. Use the hashtag #PoundWaterCooler. Just email me personally, Jimmy@curator.com. Just your tweet so I have that. And we'll get you a free copy of Unselling, and we'll throw in a copy of PeopleWork because we got a lot of those we want to give away. So we'll throw in a copy of PeopleWork if you don't have a copy of that already. But just tweet, say thank you to Scott. Tell him what your biggest takeaway was tonight on tonight's show. Use the hashtag #PoundWaterCooler. Use his handle at Unmarketing, and we will give you, Curator will give you a free copy of his book, Unselling. I read it today. And I will tell you guys, before we get into sort of this is going to be a slow pillow talk here. Before we get into pillow talk and before we talk about last call here, Scott did a really phenomenal job in this book, I think, diving into the soft stuff. And this isn't a topic that's talked about a lot, which is this idea that the purchasing decision that consumers make is happening before we ever have a conversation with them. And all the marketing we do, all the videos that Marguerite shoots up there in Tacoma, and all the blog posts Judy Weiniger produces in Warren, New Jersey, these are all things that are influencing the consumer's decision. And one topic that Chris and I will talk about in future episodes of The Water Cooler is this idea that we're starting to uncover the hidden costs of lead generation, which is there are two kind of basic divides, which is you could spend all your day lead generating, calling people who don't know you, don't like you, don't trust you. You have to convince them that you're the right person to sell or help them buy. Or, and it's not an either or, but let's say or in this case, you can invest your energy in generosity marketing, if you will. I'm going to coin that term tonight, but this idea of giving back, giving first to your community, sharing relevant and valuable information. And what you will end up with, not immediately because there isn't an immediate sort of responses, but what you will end up with is those come list me calls. You know, hey, Marguerite, I just watched your video on, you know, 5 things I need to know before I purchase a condo in Tacoma. It's super helpful. Me and my wife are, you know, really thankful that you shared it. We'd like to meet with you, right? Marguerite didn't have to call that person 50 times, bang on their door, send them 500 emails, send them 500 taxes, right? So one thing that we want to kind of start to explore this year in The Water Cooler and going into 2015 is this idea that we do think there's a balance. Yes, you've got to pay the rent. Yes, you've got to pay your marketing costs and your sales costs and all the costs that go along with running a business. So there are some things that you need to do to get your revenue to where it needs to be and your profit obviously where it needs to be. But there is also an opportunity in our experience where you can invest in the long term, where you can invest in the things that will actually help you grow your brand. And I can tell you guys right now, Curator, you guys have seen our growth. You've seen our story over the last 2 years. We're a living testament of that. We do paid advertising. We do sales calls, but it's only a part of what we do. We do the show, obviously, and we talk and we write and we share as much as we can. So again, I hope you guys got a tremendous amount of value tonight's show. I'll wrap it up here with last call. Scott Stratton at Unmarketing on Twitter. Use the hashtag #PoundWaterCooler. Tell him what your biggest takeaway was, and share that with me so I can get you a copy of his book and a copy of PeopleWork. So hopefully that promo went well, guys, because Chris usually does those. Last call for you. I didn't mention this at the beginning of the show because I didn't want to start off on sort of the wrong foot and didn't want to sort of bring Scott in on this, but many of you know, I'm sure probably our entire audience is following the Beverly Carter story and what happened there and how she was brutally murdered. And this hits home for me as my sister's a realtor. And I think about that. And obviously for everyone here on the call who's ever been in a situation like that, I don't have a link to the direct thread, but I'll tweet it out here in a minute. But the only thing we wanted to cover in last call tonight was really this message of being safe, really, of actually taking the time to understand that in our lives, in our business, we obviously are running around 24/7 and we sometimes fall mercy to our clients' needs and become sort of a slave to being responsive and calling people back and all those things. And we sort of lose sight of the fact that you guys, and this is specifically to our audience and our super fans who are still tuning in right now, you guys do put yourselves in certain risky situations, and you know, we want you to be safe. We feel terrible about the tragedy that's happened with Beverly Carter. It's happened too many times, in my opinion. And there's a great thread and a great story about it, and a great discussion about it in the tech support group. We'll tweet that link out, and where people talk about safety, they talk about specific apps and tools, and just really great conversations about that topic. So, you know, our condolences, obviously, for anyone who knows Beverly and anyone who's ever been affected by this. And we just want you guys to be safe. So on that note, I hope you guys enjoyed tonight's show. We're going to be on next week. I believe we have Jay Papazan from Keller Williams coming on. We've got an awesome lineup. We've got Jay Papazan. We've got CC Chapman. We've got Jay Bear coming on. I'm not sure which order, honestly, but they're all coming on. It's going to be a great show. Again, Unmarketing on Twitter, at Unmarketing. Follow the hashtag #PoundWaterCooler. And I hope you guys enjoyed. Thanks for tuning in with me tonight.
Thanks for listening to The Water Cooler. All past episodes can be found at youtube.com/curatortv. That's youtube.com/curatortv. You can also subscribe right now on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, where we would love you to leave us a 5-star review. The Water Cooler airs live every Wednesday night at 9:05 p.m. Eastern on curator.com. That's curator.com. Until next time, cheers!